MechCast, Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, exciting week here on the show, of course, because Apple had an event. Yeah, we have some actual products to talk about. I'm always excited when we can turn around and do that, and we can get away maybe from the rumors for just a little bit. I'm looking through the show notes. I don't think we have any rumors in this one. So it's all going to just be content. We're going to talk about all the things that Apple announced at their Buy Innovation Only event. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, it is up and available on Apple's website, also on your Apple TV. So you can catch the keynote, catch Tim Cook and Phil Schiller and all the rest of the Apple employees showing off all of this great new tech. And I thought it was a pretty good event overall. I'm not going to say it was the best event. As you'll see as we start to talk about it, I think a lot of the updates were more or less iterative. There were some surprises, and there were actually a number of things that didn't get announced. I was a little bit more surprised by that than probably some of the actual announcements. A lot of it we did know from the rumors, but not all the details. So there are going to be some surprises in here. I think you are going to enjoy that. We're also going to talk a little bit about some feedback. We have a follow-up on personal cloud, and then we'll try and help a listener out. Or actually, we have a tip from a listener, and I'll explain some things about local snapshots and how they might be eating up some storage on your Mac and how you can get that storage space back if you want. So that'll round out this show. Like I said, it's going to be very focused on the Apple announcements. I'll give you a lot of my thoughts and opinions on the various products, and I look forward to getting your feedback on how you thought the announcements went. So that'll be the show today. Before we dive into it, though, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Linode. Hey, if you're looking for hosting, I think Linode is a great choice. They allow you to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in their Linode cloud, and you can get a server up and running literally in seconds, and they give you a lot of great options and choices. You can have your choice of Linux distributions, your choice of resources, and your choice of up to 10 different Linode locations to host your website. And best of all, they're giving all new MacCast customers a $20 credit. I have been using a Linode server. I wanted to set up a Minecraft server. I think I told you about this, and Linode made it super easy. They had one-click installs of gaming platforms. I chose Minecraft, but you can do Ark or Terraria, whatever you want. Or maybe you want to do something a little more productive, less fun. Maybe you want to run WordPress or Drupal. They can make that super easy. You can set up a GitLab server, an OpenVPN server. Like I said, it's a lot of options, but they make it super easy. Plus, they have a whole bunch of distributions. Basically, if it runs Linux, it'll run on Linode, and most of them are available out of the box, but you can also upload your own custom image if you want to create your own. It really is flexible, which gives you a lot of power. Basically, you can build whatever server you want to do pretty much whatever you want. They offer native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and industry-leading processors. And you can choose to host your server in any one of their 10 worldwide data centers. They just opened a new one in Toronto, Canada, and that one is built using their most up-to-date hardware and next-generation network backbone. And they're also going to be opening up an additional data center in Mumbai, India, by the end of this year. Pricing is simple as well, with no surprise fees. You get to pay what you want with hourly billing across all of their plans and add-on services. You can start out with something as simple as a Nanode plan for about $5 a month and even move all the way up to high-powered dedicated CPU plans if that's what you need. Their dashboard makes it super easy to manage your Linode, and upgrading your plan is always easy. You can also add on things like backup, large storage volumes, and load balancing. And if you need support, they're there for you with 24/7 live customer support and service, and they have a large documentation library, which is a great resource to use if you get stuck when you're trying to manage your Linode. Visit linode.com/maccast to set up your first Linode and get a $20 credit when you use the promo code MACCAST2019. That's MACCAST 2019 for a $20 credit on your first Linode. Linode.com/MACCAST. And a big thank you to Linode for their support of the show. So let's talk innovation. Apple had their Buy Innovation Only event. I kind of feel like maybe it was more Buy Iteration Only, but still some really great iteration. I don't mean to discount it. I think there were some really great announcements, and I kind of feel like they front-loaded the event a little bit because they started off talking about Apple's services, and I think there were some really nice surprises there, at least for me, because as you know, I've been looking forward to Apple TV Plus, and I've been a little concerned about the pricing. Well, they did not disappoint there, but I want to start talking to you first about Apple Arcade. Now, we kind of heard the rumor that Apple Arcade was going to be priced at about $4-5 a month. It came in at $4.99 a month US, and they are going to offer a 1 month free trial that includes support for up to six family members. So for your $5, you can have six people on your plan. It is accessed via the Arcade tab in the App Store. So this will be part of the App Store. You'll have sign up in there, and you'll be able to access your games from the App Store. They are going to have 100 titles at launch from 35 different studios, but they're saying they're going to add more titles in the weeks following the launch, and it is going to launch in 150 countries globally. Now, just in case you don't remember, Apple Arcade is Apple's subscription gaming service, and you will have access and be able to play all of those games across all of your Apple devices. So that includes iOS devices, Apple TV, and Mac OS. And you'll be able to start playing on one and pick up where you left off on the other. I think this is a very exciting service. It is going to launch in 150 countries globally, which is not something Apple typically does when they launch services. So that's really cool. You're not going to have to wait to get access to this. And I think the price point is excellent. I read a couple articles that were complaining that it's not enough compared to some of the other streaming services that are out there on other platforms. You know, this is a different service. This is an Apple-centric service. It's going to be a lot more casual games, although some of the stuff that they showed off during the event, pretty impressive. I am excited about this. I'm not a huge gamer, and I think this is really targeted at more of the casual to mid-level gamer and not high-core, high-end console or PC gamers. Those folks, this is not going to appeal to them. They're going to choose some other platform, Steam or something else like that. This is really a gaming service, I think, for the rest of us. And I kind of look at it like $5. I probably spend $5 on a game about every month or at least every other month. So to be able to pay one price and have access to hundreds of titles, I think this is kind of a win-win. I'm definitely going to try it out. We'll see if I continue on with the service, but I think it's worth a shot. And it's going to be available, like I said, on September 19th. That's for iPadOS and tvOS. The Mac version is not going to be available until Catalina launches, which will happen sometime later in October. So that was Apple Arcade. Pretty excited about that. But I'm even more excited about Apple TV Plus now because Apple announced the pricing and availability for that. $4.99 is what it's going to cost. $4.99 a month US. They're going to offer a 7-day free trial, and I think that is the perfect price point. We had been hearing that it might come in at $9.99, and I just really felt that was too high. But it gets even better because you might not have to pay at all. Apple's going to be offering a free year of service when you buy a new iPad, iPhone, Mac, or Apple TV, and that starts from the day of the event. So if you purchased any one of those products on September 10th or later, you're going to be able to qualify for this offer. Customers will have 3 months after their device activation to claim the offer, or if the device was purchased before the launch of the service, which launches on November 1st, then you will have 3 months starting from November 1st to activate your Apple TV Plus subscription. And again, you get a year free, so why not? And it is good for up to 6 family members again. So these are all family plans, and everybody can kind of share in that. The content on Apple TV Plus is going to be available in Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos sound on supported Mac devices and the Apple TV 4K. This is going to require newer Macs and newer devices. Apple has a list up on their website if you want to see the actual devices. But basically, most of the Macs and devices are ones that were made after 2018 or in 2019. So really just your newer devices if you want Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. But I really feel Apple is launching this in the right way. You're going to have a lot of people that are going to qualify for the free version of the service, and I think $4.99 a month is not too much to ask. Now, the other thing about this is the service is going to launch with really pretty limited content, and this was one of my concerns when we were hearing the pricing might be a little bit higher, that you know Apple is still going to be rolling out their content. I think ultimately it's going to be a somewhat competitive service. Is it ever going to compete with the likes of Netflix? I think no way, but I don't think that is what Apple is setting out to do. They said they're really focusing on quality storytelling and getting quality talent to produce these shows and create these shows and star in these shows. And I think the content that they're launching with does show that. They're going to have 7 TV series and 1 documentary at launch. The TV series are C, The Morning Show, Dickinson, For All Mankind, Helpsters, which is a kids show, Snoopy in Space, and Ghost Rider. And then the documentary is The Elephant Queen. So those are going to be the launch titles. Most Apple TV Plus series are going to premiere, they say, with 3 episodes available at launch, and then they'll add 1 new episode on a weekly basis, though they did note that some of the shows will launch with all of the episodes right at the beginning, allowing you to binge. That's going to be an interesting thing to see how people react to that. I personally like it when series on streaming services launch with the entire season ready to go, but I guess having 3 up front, that gives you enough to get a little lead time, and then you can wait a week to get the next episode. And I'm assuming, you know, once they're all out, they'll be available for binging. So you can always just hold off before you even start the series till all of the episodes are available. They're also going to be adding more shows in the future, including book club content from Oprah, a thriller from M. Night Shyamalan, and a series called Truth Be Told that is about the current popularity of true crime podcasts. That's the one with Octavia Spencer. So they're doing that. I think there's several other shows in the works. No news on the one I was most excited about, which is Amazing Stories, which is being done by Steven Spielberg. So that's one I'm looking forward to. Hopefully that will roll out sometime soon. They have a huge pipeline. We've heard about a bunch of shows, talked about a lot of them here on the MacCast. So I think ultimately they're going to have a lot of great content. But up front, it being a little bit light, I think they really hit the sweet spot for the price point. And I am super excited about it. I'm getting a new Apple product. We're going to be talking about that later in the show. So I'm going to get my first year paid for. The one question I haven't seen answered, and I tried to research this for you but couldn't find any definitive answer, is that going to continue? If you continue to buy new Apple products, are you going to keep getting the year, or is this a one-time, you know, your first year offer? I have a feeling it's a, you know, the first year is free, and then anything after that, you're going to be paying $4.99 a month. But I think given the quality of some of the trailers and things that we've seen, I'm going to be happy paying that price point. And like I said, you will be able to watch on any Apple device or Apple TV. And even more importantly, and this was a big question, we now know that you'll be able to watch online at tv.apple.com. Like I said, it is going to be launching on November 1st. And again, it's coming to 100 countries simultaneously. So again, most people are not going to have to wait to sign up for Apple TV Plus. So I thought that was a great way to kick off this event, with a lot of great new products and services. So I was excited about that part of the announcements. Next up, they talked about the new iPad, the iPad 10.2 inch. It's the seventh generation iPad, replacing the sixth gen 9.7 inch model. It pretty much has all of the same specs, though, with just a few exceptions. One thing I was a little bit disappointed by is that it still has an A10 Fusion chip, so that did not get upgraded. I kind of felt they could have at least bumped it up to the A12, which is the processor that's in the iPad mini. Still, Apple is claiming that it is twice as fast as the previous model. I'm a little bit curious to find out how that is happening. I'm assuming maybe it's a lot of optimizations in iPad OS, and because the processor, again, didn't change. It does have an all-new display going from 9.7 inches to 10.2 inches at a resolution of 2160 by 1620, the same 264 pixels per inch, though, as the previous display. And one thing I noted in the tech specs is that it lost full sRGB support, or it doesn't have the full sRGB standard like the previous 9.7 inch display did. So I'm not really sure what that means, if it is a big deal or not. It kind of sounds like it's a big deal, but I think it's going to be up to the individual person. The other big new enhancement is they are adding now a smart connector to the entry-level iPad, and that means that there is now a full-size smart keyboard that you can get for the iPad 10.2-inch model. A few other things on the cellular. There's no CDMA support, but it does offer an eSIM, which is an upgrade from the previous generation model, and it still has support for the Apple Pencil, but it is still the first generation Apple Pencil, so you don't get the new Apple Pencil. Storage sizes are 32 gigabytes and 128 gigabytes. I kind of feel like at this point, 32 gigabytes as an entry level, especially for an iPad with a lot of the new features of iPad OS coming into play, including the ability to attach external storage devices. I guess that's an advantage where you can have stuff on external storage, but I'm thinking more you're going to want to store more stuff on it. You're going to want to plug in, drives and bring over files and stuff like that. And having more internal storage, I think, is becoming a little bit more important. Yeah, we can still put a lot of stuff in the cloud, but I just feel like 32 gigs feels like it's skimping a little bit. But it is staying at $329 US for the entry-level price, and it is available for purchase now. So this is one of the things that Apple announced that you can pick up right away. Along with this announcement, Apple did also drop the prices of the 11-inch and 12.9-inch 1-terabyte iPad Pros in the United States by about $200. That looks like maybe they're trying to clear out the iPad Pros, because we do have the rumor that there could be an iPad Pro announcement next month, sometime in October. We are expecting that. So those price drops, along with the release of this new iPad, I think show some signs that we're going to get some updates here pretty soon in the Pro line as well. But, an okay bump to the iPad. I like the larger display and some of the enhancements like the smart connector. But, again, as I was pointing out earlier, really iterative and not a really huge upgrade here. And it was sort of a similar thing, although there were a few more enhancements with the Apple Watch announcement. Apple Watch 5 was announced. Probably the biggest thing here, I think, is that it is going to be the first Apple Watch that has an always-on display. So you'll be able to view the time and complications all the time on the Apple Watch. When you're not looking at it, when you don't raise your wrist, the display does dim to save on power. And it has a new ultra-low power display driver and optimized watch faces that are enabling that feature to be turned on and still allow the device to maintain its 18-hour battery life. Here, we did get a new processor, a new 64-bit dual-core S5, and there is a new W3 wireless chip. So a nice enhancement there. As far as sensors and things like that go, they added a built-in compass. I guess that's pretty cool, especially for folks who exercise and hike and those sorts of things, but it's not like getting a great new health feature like glucose monitoring, which is something we've been hearing about for a long time, and it'd be great to see. They did, as expected, have some new case options. There's both a brushed and a space black titanium finish, and they did bring back ceramic. So you can get some new style to your Apple Watch, and actually they really did increase the style options because they announced what they're calling Apple Watch Studio, meaning that you can go online or go in store and you can now combine all of the different Apple Watch finishes and materials along with the different Apple Watch bands to really create your own unique style of Apple Watch. In the past, you kind of had to buy the default configuration and then upgrade after the fact. So now you can do it when you purchase your Apple Watch. And so that's a nice update and little enhancement. You know, it's always good to have a more personalized experience. Apple Watch 5, you can order now. They're going to be shipping in September or later. Later in September, I guess I should say, September 20th, and pricing starts at $399 for the Sport GPS models and $499 for the cellular. Along with the announcement of the Apple Watch 5, they did discontinue the Series 4 model, but the Series 3 GPS is still available, and that is starting at just $199 US. So some great entry-level pricing on Apple Watch as well. And then along with the Apple Watch, there were a few other things. Apple announced that they were going to participate in or create more health studies, and they're doing that through a new Apple Research app. And they announced they're going to start off with three different research studies, a hearing study that you can opt into, a menstrual cycle study, and a heart rate and movement study. So they're adding to their research because when they've done that in the past, it's bore great fruits. They pointed out that because of the Apple heart rate study, that allowed them to add new features like the ability to monitor and detect irregular heart rhythms in Apple Watch. So they want to expand on that, and they're doing that through this new research app. You can now also get an Apple Watch USB-C charging cable on Apple's website. In the past, you just had the USB-A option, so if you prefer USB-C, that is available now. And they dropped their prices on the Leather Loop and Milanese Loop watch bands down to just $99 US. I think prior those were $159, so a $50 price drop on those bands. So again, some nice enhancements and updates to Apple Watch with Apple Watch 5. Then we had the announcement of the new iPhone models, starting with the iPhone 11, which is the successor to the current iPhone XR. So this features a new A13 processor and a new U1 ultra wideband chip. For the A13 processor, it's a new quad-core GPU and 6-core CPU. Apple says the A13 13 processor now makes the iPhone 11 the fastest smartphone on the market. And in fact, they claim it can perform over 1 trillion operations per second. And what's even more amazing to me is they were able to do that along with adjusting the power efficiency and making this thing extremely optimized so you get a lot better and longer battery life. The U1 chip is also an interesting thing, this ultra-wideband chip, because it can create a personal area network and allows for spatial awareness functionality in the iPhone. What this means is that it can sort of detect your surroundings a little bit better and also be used to locate nearby items. So you can do things like point your iPhone at another iPhone while you're using AirDrop, and then it will detect that person is near you and bring their name to the top of the list. So if you have a group of people and you're doing an AirDrop, whoever you point it at is going to be popped up to the list because it has this spatial awareness. It knows how far away that person is from you. So this is going to be great, I think, for AR applications as well. It also means that it can help you locate your other devices like your AirPods or another iPhone or iPad when you use the Find My app. So you're going to be able to do kind of indoor geolocation because of this new chip. And that's going to enable, I think, some very interesting applications, not only the ones from Apple, but also probably some third-party applications. So I can't wait to see what developers do with this technology. So that was kind of cool to hear about. As far as the display goes on the iPhone 11, it is still using the 6.1-inch Liquid Retina LCD, so they haven't upgraded to OLED. But there was a nice upgrade, as we thought there might be, to the camera system. It now features two cameras on the back. And what was interesting is it's not like the iPhone XS and XS Max, where you have a wide angle and a telephoto. What you actually get now is a wide angle and an ultra wide angle with 120-degree field of view on the iPhone 11. And all of the sensors are upgraded to 12 megapixels, so a nice bump up there. The wide-angle lens is a 26mm f1.8 version with a 6-element lens, optical image stabilization, and 100% focus pixels, which helps with low light. And there is a new night mode that looks great. This was a feature I wish Apple had added before. Right now, it really kind of looks like they're just following what the Google Pixel did. And Apple, you know, if you remember, tried to convince us that, you know, that was more of a gimmick, but here we see Apple following suit. So I think it's a great feature. I'm glad it's coming to iPhone. Again, I wish it had come sooner. The ultra-wide lens is a 13mm f2.4 lens with 5 elements. And what's nice is you can switch in the software when you're using the camera app between the two lenses on the fly, and you can kind of even zoom in and out of the focal lengths as you do that. So there's some nice enhancements to the camera software as well to support these additional lenses. Apple didn't just upgrade the rear cameras on the iPhone 11, though. They also put a new camera, 12-megapixel camera, in the TrueDepth camera and added some new capabilities, including the ability to do slow motion. So now Apple says you can capture, and I can't even believe I have to say this, slow fees. Yeah, it's Apple's marketing team. I just want to slap somebody over there. But we now have slow fees, people, as well as groupies. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. That has to do with the wide angle on the FaceTime camera as well. But like I said, with the enhancements to the A13 processor, the iPhone XR already had great battery life. With the iPhone 11, it gets even better. Apple says you're going to get an hour more battery life than with the previous generation. Sound-wise, sound is enhanced as well with spatial audio and Dolby Atmos sound on an iPhone. That's pretty cool. And pricing is a little bit lower than with the previous iPhone XR. They're going to start iPhone 11 pricing at just $699 US. Pre-orders are going to start on Friday the 13th, so just a day or two away, maybe even today, depending upon when you pick up this podcast. But it is going to be at a different time. We're used to Apple pre-orders starting at midnight Pacific time. I guess a specific time as well, but midnight Pacific time. This time around, they're actually starting pre-orders at 5 a.m. Pacific time. So that is a new time. Be aware of that. It's going to be nice for those of you on the East Coast because you get to sleep in. For those of us on the West Coast, we're going to have to get up a little bit earlier, but not as early as people used to have to get up in other time zones. So I think this is a good compromise. Pre-orders, again, on Friday the 13th at 5 a.m., and the iPhone will arrive if you get a pre-order in on the 13th as early as September 20th. And what's nice this time around, too, is that you can get unlocked devices day one. They are going to offer those right up front. That wasn't always the case. And you can still get an iPhone XR if you want. Apple did drop the prices a little bit, $599 US for an iPhone XR, and they are keeping the iPhone 8 around as well. Those are going to start at $449 US. So Apple has a nice entry-level lineup for the iPhones, going from the iPhone 8 all the way up to the new iPhone 11. Oh, and I forgot to mention, there's some new colors. There's a green, or what Apple calls green, kind of more of a mint green, and also purple. Again, Apple calls it purple, but it is more of, I would say, a lavender. I think there are some pretty nice colors. There also is a yellow, and still white, black, and product red. So you can really get your choice of colors, and I think they all look pretty great. Another interesting thing is, as we expected, there is no iPhone text on the back of this year's models. The Apple logo is centered, and the back glass on the iPhone 11 is glossy, except for where the camera bump is, the square camera bump. That is a matte finish. And I think they look great. I think I'm looking forward to seeing them in person, but just based on the images and some of the hands-on images and videos that I've seen so far, I think this is going to be a really popular model. The iPhone XR was Apple's by far most popular and best-selling iPhone last year, and I think the iPhone 11 is just going to continue that trend. I think these things are going to sell like hotcakes. I think it's a great price point, and I think a lot of people are really going to go for this option, just like they did with the iPhone XR. Of course, Apple doesn't just have an update to the iPhone XR. They're also going to update the iPhone XS and XS Max with the newly named iPhone 11 Pro and iPhone 11 Pro Max. Yeah, we're getting a lot of words in our iPhone naming, but Apple says these are our Pro phones, and I think I like the fact that it brings the naming in line with iPad and Mac and all that stuff. So I'm all for it. I think it's great. I don't have really any complaints there. Just like the iPhone 11, it has the same A13 processor, so all of those benefits, including the benefits to battery life, although on the iPhone 11 Pro and 11 Pro Max models, it's even more pronounced. Apple says you're going to get an additional 4 hours of battery life with the iPhone 11 Pro, and an additional 5 hours of battery life with the iPhone 11 Pro Max. And this is over the current models that we have, the iPhone XS and XS Max. I did read somewhere, and I haven't confirmed this, that these new phones are slightly thicker and maybe a little bit heavier. So maybe Apple is actually listening to us this time around and, you know, sacrificing a little bit of thinness for better battery life, but we'll have to wait until we see some teardowns to confirm that. I've also heard that the batteries shouldn't be changed very much from the current generation models. So we'll have to wait and see on that one, but that could be another factor in this massively increased battery life. And I think that's great. I think people really want in their phones more battery life. And if Apple can deliver this much, and we'll see if the real world tests, play out to this, then I think that's awesome. Another thing that a lot of people have been wanting for a long time was the inclusion of a fast charger. And you are going to get an 18-watt fast charger with the iPhone 11 Pro and 11 Pro Max, along with a USB-C to Lightning cable. As far as physical size goes, like I said, they may be slightly thicker, but beyond that, same sizes. iPhone 11 Pro is a 5.8-inch model, and the 11 Pro Max is a 6.5-inch gigantophone. As you might imagine, I'm sticking with the iPhone 11 because I like that size. They do have an improved OLED display. Apple is calling it a Super Retina XDR display. Massive brightness, 12,000 nits, a wider dynamic range, and an unbelievable 2,000,000 to 1 contrast ratio. So early reports are that this display is amazing. I thought the display on the iPhone XS and XS Max was amazing. So anything that Apple can do to improve it, I think is just gravy. I think at this point, for a lot of us, it's going to be kind of hard to see the differences. As a matter of fact, the LCD that's on the iPhone 11 or the iPhone XR, I think is almost as good as the display, the OLED display that is on the XS, XS Max. And so I think it's getting very hard to discern unless you have really, really good eyes. I'm sure there's pros out there that can tell the difference, but for the rest of us, I'm not so sure how much some of these things really matter. Something I would have liked to have seen in the Pro display, and a couple of people have pointed this out, it's not a Pro Motion display, which is surprising. Where's the faster refresh rate? The 120 hertz refresh rate? I think that would really spell a Pro display. Maybe they just couldn't pull it off with all of the other things, but that was a little bit of a disappointment. The camera system, though, Apple really kind of pointing out that this year's iPhones are focusing on photography and cameras, both in terms of the computational end of things with the software and machine learning, artificial intelligence, but also just with the lenses themselves. Just like with the iPhone 11, they upgraded to 12 megapixel sensors across the board, and they added the 120-degree ultra-wide f2.1 aperture lens to the iPhone 11 Pros, along with the wide-angle lens and the telephoto lens. So, yep, the triple lens system that we had been hearing about in all of the rumors. Just like on the iPhone 11, you get night mode, and you also get something Apple is calling Deep Fusion, which, as near as I can tell, uses computational photography. It takes like 9 different exposures. It's basically the next generation of Apple's HDR, and of course it looks brilliantly amazing in Apple's images that they show on stage, but we're going to have to wait to see how it looks in real life when we use it. I have a feeling it's going to be amazing. This is going to be the best camera smartphone possibly on the market. That might be saying a lot right now, but it's looking pretty good. We still have some Android models that are in the works that could unseat it, but I think for now, at least maybe when it launches, this will be the best smartphone camera on the market. And that is saying a lot, and it's pretty impressive. As far as other features, you can record 4K video with extended dynamic range at 60 frames per second. And I'll just speak to that camera bump and the lenses. Yeah, they're not the most attractive thing on the planet. Apple is getting a lot of flack online, in the community, in the media about this. I don't know that there was much of a way around it. I guess they could have made it prettier by not having the bump. I think that just adds to it. I don't think it's as much just the three lenses, although there's some debate over the orientation of the three lenses, and I don't know if there were technical reasons that they have to be in a triangle, but that does look a little weird as well. A couple people have pointed out, like, it looks like a stove or a Norelco razor on the back of your phone, and I think these are legitimate observations, let's just call them. And, I'd been very upfront when we heard the rumors. I am not a big fan of the cracker bump. I think it looks ugly, and hopefully we'll be able to hide it with a little bit with a case. And so that's what I plan to do. I always use Apple's leather case, and the new ones look okay, but that camera bump, it's pretty hard to hide. Let's just be honest. If you've seen the images, you know what I'm talking about. So anyway, I am looking forward to the new cameras. I think this is great. Again, on the front-facing camera, the TrueDepth camera system, again, bumped up to 12 megapixel, just like on the iPhone 11. You do have the wide-angle option, so you can take groupies and slofies. Oh, man, I hate those marketing terms. It has the spatial audio with the Dolby Atmos sound, so a lot of the same specs as the iPhone 11, which is just another case to point out that the iPhone 11 is a pretty amazing, capable phone. Just like the iPhone XR it's replacing, it has a lot of the same features and technologies that the quote-unquote pro models now have, and at a much more affordable price. I'm not going to call it a cheap price because it's still an expensive phone starting at $700, but more affordable than, say, your $1,000 or $1,100 starting price phone, which is exactly what the iPhone 11 Pro and 11 Pro Max are. Also, not a surprise, but something that Apple is getting a lot of complaints on, it does not have 5G, but we knew that already because of the whole Motorola Intel chipset thing. And really, I kind of feel Apple's argument about 5G not being ready is a legitimate one. We will have 5G phones next year in 2020, and that's when we should have wider rollout of 5G technologies. And a lot of the other 5G phones on the market, I think it's worth pointing out, don't have support for what will likely be the full 5G specifications. So Apple waiting means that they can have a better quality 5G phone in the market, or one that at least supports more of the 5G standard when it's ready. And I think that's a good thing. Now, a lot of people are complaining, saying, well, if you buy an iPhone today, this year, then, you know, a lot of people don't upgrade for 3 years and you're not going to have support for 5G. I see that as a choice. You can, if 5G is going to be really important to you, I would say don't buy an iPhone this year. Definitely don't buy an iPhone. Wait and get the 5G model. I don't think buying a 5G Android phone necessarily is going to keep you from needing to do an upgrade again, because a lot of the 5G specs are not fully ratified and supported with the current models. So just all things to think about. Apple does say that the new iPhone has a faster gigabit class LTE. What exactly does that mean? If we look at the similar technology in the updated iPad Pros, it means probably about 13% faster LTE speeds. So you do get a little speed bump with this year's 4G LTE iPhone. So that's something, right? Better than nothing. Also, Apple added a new color this year and new finishes. You have an option to get a midnight green color, which is kind of like a dark, almost military khaki green, or it looks like really kind of a green space gray. I actually kind of like it, and I think that's the color that I am ultimately going to pick when I buy my iPhone. As a matter of fact, that's the thing that I pre-selected already, so I think that's what I'm going to get. They also updated the space gray and silver and gold finishes as well, because the glass is Apple's most shatter-resistant ever, so they strengthened it quite a bit. And the back finish is going to be a textured matte glass. So that's a new thing for the iPhone. And so as far as the back glass goes, it's kind of the exact opposite of the iPhone 11. So the iPhone 11, I think I told you, has a glossy glass finish with a matte camera bump. The iPhone 11 Pros have a matte finish on the back glass with a glossy camera bump. And I think that's a nice touch. I mean, if they're going to have that ugly camera bump in there, I think mixing the materials and sort of accentuating it, or mixing the finishes and accentuating it a little bit, is a nice thing, even if it means it makes it a little bit harder to hide. And I guess that's the point, is Apple didn't try to hide it. I think they just saw, this is the way it's going to be, we're going all in. And I guess I can appreciate that, even if I don't ultimately like it. There's improved water resistance with an IP68 rating, and that's the same for the iPhone 11, along with the iPhone 11 Pros. So even more water resistant, and pricing on the iPhone 11 Pros is the same as last year, starting at $999 for the iPhone 11 Pro and $1099 for the iPhone 11 Pro Max. And again, pre-orders are happening Friday, this Friday, the 13th of September at 5 a.m. Pacific time, and they will be arriving in folks' hands as early as September 20th. So get your pre-orders in. As always, you can go on the Apple app, the App Store app, or the Apple Store app, rather. Pre-select your options. Get everything ready to go. You can also get pre-approved for your iPhone upgrade if you're on the iPhone upgrade program, or sign up for it and get pre-approved if you plan on buying under that plan. And I highly advise doing that, because at 5 a.m. Pacific time on Friday, it's going to get crazy, and you don't want to have to waste time pushing a bunch of buttons, selecting all your options, and waiting to get all your approvals from your carrier. And you can do all that up front right now. So go into the app now, preset it up if you're planning on buying a new iPhone. And I am planning on upgrading. I am going to get the iPhone 11 Pro. I'm thinking in the green color with a new leather case in the Meyer Lemon. And I actually posted an image of this up on my Twitter, because I'm actually pretty excited about it. I think that color combination looks really nice. And there is a lot of nice options that you can pick up. So what do you think? Are you getting a new iPhone? Let me know. And let me know what you're excited about, or maybe what you're disappointed about. Shoot me some feedback, maccast@gmail.com. Just a few other things to comment on this event. A few odds and ends, tidbits, if you will. We did not get bi-directional wireless charging. That was a little bit of a disappointment. I was looking forward to that. I think that was would be a great feature, that, you know, you could drop your AirPods onto your iPhone and charge them up. That would be really, really cool. Did not happen for whatever reason. We don't really know why at this point. Also, 3D Touch is gone on all of the new devices. I'm hearing from a lot of you that you're disappointed about that. It's being replaced by haptic touch, which is like what you have on the iPad, just a press and hold. You can actually go into the settings in the software on iOS or iPadOS, iOS 13, and adjust the length of time a little bit that triggering happens. So if you find yourself accidentally triggering it, you can tweak it, or if you feel like it's taking too long, you can make it shorter. So I think this is a good replacement option for 3D Touch. Honestly, I talk to a lot of people. I ask a lot of people this question. There are outliers, and you might be one of these people who really use and rely on 3D Touch on a daily basis, but most users I know forget about it. They don't even use it all that often. And so I think what Apple found was it was a lot of technology for something that a lot of people weren't using, and they could focus time and resources and efforts someplace else. And it's one of these hidden user interface things that, yes, it's a great pro feature, but you can get there with a press and hold just as easily. And what I like about moving in this direction is that it makes the user experience consistent from iPad to iPhone. I didn't like having different ways of doing things, because I think ultimately for consumers, it's confusing. It's less consumer friendly. So as disappointed as I know some of you are with the loss of 3D Touch, I kind of feel like it was the right move for Apple to make. But that's just my opinion. Let me know your opinion, especially if you disagree with me. With the release of the iPhone, we're also going to get the release of iOS 13. It's going to come out a day before the iPhones arrive on September 19th. And if you've been waiting on iPadOS, That's going to come a little bit later in the month on September 30th, along with an update to iOS. They're pre-announcing, and this is something I don't think Apple has ever done before, iOS 13.1, which is going to come out on September 30th. So you'll get your new iPhones with iOS 13, and then just a few weeks later, be able to upgrade to iOS 13.1. Apple is also now selling new clear cases. They're available for all models of the iPhone. Last year, you could only get it on the iPhone XR, I think because of the colors. I think with the new green color, Apple wanted to make it available for the iPhone 11 Pro models as well. So you can get it for any iPhone, the new clear case. There's also, you know, new colors of leather cases and silicone cases and all that stuff. You can see all those on the App Store app or Apple Store app. I keep saying that. In the Apple Store app or on Apple's website. You can also now get AppleCare Plus on payment plans, and Apple added a $29 US AppleCare Plus for AirPods and Beats headphones. And then one thing that Apple did not cover, but something that was updated on their website, is some software updates coming for HomePod. I think we heard back at Worldwide Developer Conference that they were going to add support for radio stations. We're going to get 100,000 radio stations through iHeartRadio, Radio.com, and TuneIn coming to HomePod on September 30th. So there will be a software update on September 30th to bring those features. And then later this fall, Apple says we're going to get an ambient sound update, so an ambient sound generator on the HomePod. And also, thank goodness, finally support for up to 6 different people. So a more personalized experience when it comes to music and personal requests. So everybody in the family will be able to use the HomePod and get their own music and their own texts and their own calendars and all that sort of stuff. And it's going to be driven by voice recognition in the HomePod. And I think that's going to make the HomePod a much more family usable device. It's going to enable, you know, me to maybe move it out of my office and into my living room. So I'm looking forward to that update. We don't have a hard date on that other than saying later this fall. So looking forward to that. But with that, that kind of covers all of Apple's special announcements. Again, I'd love to hear feedback from you on any of this stuff. Shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. Just a few other things to cover in the news, or actually really one other thing, something that had been rumored, has been rumored that Apple is working on, is possibly an augmented reality headset. We thought we could hear about that. It was highly unlikely, but we thought Apple might talk about it in this announcement. They didn't, but that doesn't mean that our favorite developers haven't been poking around in some of the betas and in Xcode to see what's going on with that project. Guillerme Rambo and Steve Trotten-Smith found that Xcode 11 features an AR display device framework. And not only that, there seems to be references to several code names rumored to be for Apple's headset. So Apple, it appears to be, is working on some sort of hardware for augmented reality. There also seems to be mentions of support for a gamepad profile that would work in conjunction with stereo AR apps. So the question then becomes, is this actually a dedicated headset, or is this something that's going to be built into iPhone and work more like a face-mounted augmented reality display system? I think the latter is more likely. I don't think Apple's going to do a set of AR glasses like HoloLens or something like that. I think it's going to be more like something you slide your iPhone into, and then the iPhone goes into a stereo AR mode, and that's how it's enabled. And this AR display device framework would allow developers to build apps to support that. So I think that's what we're going to see at first. But again, this is just pure speculation on my part. As far as when it will happen, nobody knows really for sure, but best guesses, and some analysts have said that Apple is trying to release this sometime in 2020. So probably not this year, but maybe sometime next year. I would imagine more toward the announcement of the iPhone 12, right? This is probably something that will be built in as a feature of the iPhone 12, along with all of this other framework and updates to the software and tools for developers and stuff like that. So I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings about augmented reality displays and headsets and virtual reality displays and headsets. I know a lot of people really like them. I haven't caught that bug, and I don't know why. I like AR a lot as it is currently implemented, but honestly, I don't use it that frequently. When I do, I like it and I like the experience. Maybe it would be better with a head-mounted display. But I guess until we actually have a product and I can play around with it and use it, I have ambivalent feelings about it, I guess is where I'm at with it. But what do you think? Are you super excited about this concept that Apple could be doing an augmented reality headset? Would you prefer it to be more like something that is enabled via your iPhone? Or would you more want kind of a dedicated product, more like a set of glasses? I kind of feel like I'd be more excited about it if it was its own device, if it was its own product, as much as that means that I'm probably going to have to pay a lot more for it. But I think it would just be a better user experience overall. But those are just my thoughts. Shoot me your thoughts, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to kind of do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Masterclass. Hey, if you haven't checked out Masterclass yet, you really should. I am just absolutely loving it. One of my favorite things about Masterclass is actually the amazing depth and variety of courses that are being taught on there, and these are by the masters in their field. You know, it really is the best of the best. No place else can you kind of get access to this kind of talent. I mean, where else can you learn filmmaking from Ron Howard? I mean, it's just crazy. I've actually been taking Neil Gaiman's course on writing, and I'm not a writer, but I'm learning a lot from it to hopefully help me improve my storytelling as it relates to podcasting. So I'm trying to make my podcasting better, and this is turning out to be a great way to do it. He's super engaging. I absolutely love how entertaining the courses are, and I found his comments on his finding your voice lesson to be particularly relevant for me in terms of how to find my voice in podcasting. You know, finding your voice for writing and finding your voice for podcasting, I think, are very similar things. And plus, his lessons, like many I've taken, just feel very intimate. It's like he's speaking right to me, kind of like you're in a classroom of one. And that's another thing that I love about Masterclass. The quality and the presentation of the courses, I think, is the best I've ever seen. And they each have their own unique style, which keeps them interesting. They're also presented in small chunks. So if you don't have a lot of time, 10, 15 minutes, you can take one of the segments in the course and then get on to something else, or you can just blast through all of it. It's really up to you. You have a lot of flexibility, and that's made even easier by the fact that you can access Masterclass on any of your devices, iPhone, iPad, Mac, or even on your Apple TV. And that's kind of my favorite way to consume Masterclass content. And while you can get courses individually, I think having the all-access pass is really the way to go, because what happens is you take one course, say like documentary filmmaking from Ken Burns, and then you start finding other things. You're like, hey, I want to check out this other class. Oh, that one looks amazing. And having that all-access pass means you can just jump around. You can get all of this content for one, what I think is really affordable price. They have over 60 classes right now, and they are constantly adding more. So I really think it's a great investment in your learning. I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, And as a MacCast listener, you can get 15% off that annual all-access pass. Just go to masterclass.com/MacCast. That's masterclass.com/MacCast for 15% off Masterclass. And a big thank you to Masterclass for their support of the podcast. Last episode, we had a listener write in and ask about a way to set up a personal cloud to do file sharing, to do backup, something that wouldn't be going through the actual internet, but basically he wanted to be able to put another hard drive in a friend or family member's house and then back up to it or store stuff on it, sync stuff to it directly. And I think I didn't have kind of a really great solution for this. I threw out some options and we went back and forth, but I threw it out to you in the community to say, hey, what is out there? What are you guys using? And I received a bit of feedback from quite a few people about a service or a bit of software called Resilio Sync. Several people wrote in to say, hey, I use this. I think it's great. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. But basically what it is it's a free service, free for home or personal use, and it uses peer-to-peer technology. So you can connect two computers together or multiple personal devices, computers together, and sync between all of them, and it goes direct from device to device. Now, when I started looking into this, one concern that I had was this was actually what was formerly known as BitTorrent Sync, and it is used and built on top of BitTorrent technology. And that may give some folks reservations. I know when I read about it, it gave me pause, and I started looking into it. I started asking questions. I asked some of the folks who had sent this tip in and said, hey, so you've been using this. How is the security? Is it only end-to-end going through your computers? What's going on here? As far as the claims made by Resilio Sync, they say that Sync only transfers data by establishing a direct connection between the peers that you select. So it's not going through other people's computers, because what I was concerned about is the way BitTorrent typically worked was it would spread your files across everybody that was participating in the BitTorrent network. It looks like the way that Resilio Sync is set up to work is that it's just the devices that you say, hey, include in this sort of sync network. And you pick the devices, and those are the devices that they use. So I kind of question how well it might work if you just have two devices or two computers. But again, a number of people in our community say they've been using this for years, and it works great. So I did want to share it with you guys because it is potentially a solution, at least something you can look into. The other thing that they claim on the Resilio Sync website in the FAQ when you look up or ask the question about security, they say it's direct peer-to-peer, but then they also say that the data is encrypted in transit and all of the keys are kept and stored locally. So never goes up into any public cloud, onto any third-party services or computers. So it might be a good option for a few of you out there, or many of you out there. As I said, several MacCast users say they use it and love it, so might be worth checking out. Resilio Sync at resilio.com/individuals for the personal cloud version. And then finally for this week, I think we can all agree in the age of sort of SSDs and shrinking internal storage, storage is always a concern. Like how much disk space you have, especially if you have like a portable Mac, is something that you kind of have to stay on top of. And I received a tip from listener John this week that I thought could help some of you out.
Hi, Adam. This is John from beautiful Palos Verdes, California. No doubt you often get questions about hidden files taking up space on hard drives and how to get rid of them. Often this is because Time Machine keeps going when one is out and about and disconnected from an external Time Machine drive. Apple's attitude is, don't worry, we'll free that up when you need it. The problem is, one may need it before Apple decides one needs it. For example, I have a 4 terabyte internal drive on my MacBook Pro and just under 2 terabits of files, and I do my super duper backups to a 2 terabyte drive. I need to get rid of these files way before Apple decides to free them up. I just found a solution. I've been using Daisy Disk for years, thanks to a recommendation from you. They now have a feature that lets the user easily delete these purgeable files by simply dragging and dropping them. I thought your listeners might like to know. Anyway, keep up the great work. I've been a listener since day one. Take care.
Hey, John, thank you. And thank you for being a listener for so long. Yeah, I know you've been in the community for a very long time, and I really appreciate your contribution here. I want to just explain, just in case you weren't already aware, what John's talking about here is if you use Time Machine and you're ever disconnected from your external Time Machine volume, Time Machine will actually still run, but locally on your Mac, and it will save the backups locally to your hard drive. And then what happens is when you get back to Time Machine, it will move all that stuff over there, back over to your Time Machine backup. But point is that in the meantime, you have these files that are actually using up space on your machine. Now, Time Machine will only do this if there's actually enough available free space on your internal drive. As a matter of fact, the rule is there needs to be at least 20% free disk space, and then it will save these local snapshots. The system will see the space used by the local snapshots as actually free space. And so that's why Apple says, oh, you know, it's available for you to use, even though we're using it for Time Machine right now. The operating system, the Finder and everything, is going to think this is available space and that they can always write to it. So from that perspective, yeah, you have that space. It's not really used up. You're not going to see it used up when you get info on your drive. But as John pointed out here, if you're doing a clone backup to some other system, that might be extra data that gets pulled across and uses up extra space someplace else. So it could come into play. So there may be instances where you want to be able to delete that purgeable content. And John, you know I'm a huge fan of Daisy Disk. I think it's a great utility for finding large files and just cleaning up your system in general. So I was very happy to hear that they have this new feature for purging the local storage or the local snapshots from Time Machine, and that it's really easy to do. I also did want to point out to folks that you can also manually delete these via Time Machine without any third-party tools at all. Not as easy as using Daisy Disk, but you can open Time Machine Preferences from the Time Machine menu in the menu bar, or just go to System Preferences and then click on Time Machine, and then from there, deselect the Backup Automatically option, or just click the on-off switch. So basically, turn Time Machine off, and depending upon what you see in the Time Machine Preferences. And then just simply wait a few minutes and the local snapshots will actually be deleted. Now, remember, you're doing this when you're disconnected from your external Time Machine volume. So then after a few minutes, the local snapshots will actually get purged and deleted by the operating system or by the Time Machine system itself. And then you can turn Time Machine back on again, and it will still remember your backup disk. So when you get back home and connect back into your backup disk, you should be okay. So actually, to avoid Time Machine starting to do the local snapshots again, probably what you want to do is turn it off, wait a few minutes, or turn it off, leave it off while you're out and about, and then turn it on right before you get home and you're going to connect back up to, or turn it back on when you get home, I guess, and right before you reconnect to your Time Machine volume. Like I said, not as simple or as easy as the Daisy Disk option. It's also not as visible, right? You don't really have a user interface to tell, did it actually delete the local storage? So you might consider going the Daisy Disk route. Daisy Disk, I think, costs about $10 US. I think it's well worth it, and I will have a link to Daisy Disk in the show notes at maccast.com. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, I want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. And finally, if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.